It took Moore several years and judicious financial involvement with key members of Congress before he secured enough government funds actually to build a large, working prototype of his telegraph device. In his first week of commercial operation in 1844, connecting Washington with Baltimore, it took in just 13.5 cents in paid traffic. But in the next year, an expanded line was taking in over $100 each week. And within a decade, Morse was one of the wealthier men in North America. Did it matter that he'd largely stolen the idea for his invention? Telegraphs were already operating in England and Germany, and in America, other inventors were close behind them. Someone else would no doubt have helped jumpstart the American system if Morse hadn't done it. Although divine justice didn't keep Morse from earthly riches, it did strike in another way. Joseph Henry had a satisfying life, at ease with his students and respected by his peers. Morse, however, having engaged in so much subterfuge, spent much of the next 3 decades stuck in litigation, trying to defend the patents he'd railroaded through in his name. There was one embarrassing moment when his lawyer was forced to announce to the Supreme Court that a notebook which, honestly, truly, had Morse's original handwritten notes on the telegraph had mysteriously disappeared in a fire to which there were no witnesses, shortly before it was supposed to be shown to the court. The invention had other unexpected consequences as well. Before the telegraph, a horseman carrying a message between two cities had to be transported by perhaps 1,000 pounds of animal over rocks, muddy ruts, and the occasional fallen tree. That took plenty of food for the two mammals involved, as well as the bulky technologies of saddle, stables, horseshoes, and the like. With few exceptions, information at the start of the 19th century traveled at about the same rate it had managed in ancient Sumer. A thin copper telegraph wire, however, carrying the same message, merely had to move an electric current composed of those mysterious sparks. No one in Henry's day knew that those sparks had something to do with electrons, which weigh less than a millionth of an ounce each. But his contemporaries did realize that what was in the wires was much smaller and moved a lot faster than anything in the ordinary world. A battery small enough to fit in a thimble could power a message great distances and at great speed. The world changed. Financial news can now be sent instantly between cities and, along with enhanced opportunities for insider trading, a new style of corporation arose. Offices in far-distant cities could be easily linked. Train networks became more complex, for telegraphs strung beside the rail lines could synchronize departures and arrivals across entire countries. There were psychological shifts as well. Before electricity became widespread, time had been something local, changeable, and personal. New York and Baltimore, for example, had kept their clock systems several minutes apart since they were at slightly different longitudes, and noon arrived a few minutes later in Baltimore than it did in New York. Each city was a separate world, so it was fair to think that each individual strolling here or there or working on this or that isolated farm was part of a similarly separate world. But now those worlds could be synchronized, and wherever you were, you knew where you fit in the tight, universal control of clock time. It was an early form of globalization. As a telegraph spread into Central and Eastern Europe, millions of peasants were forced to take on last names, the better for newly enlarged government bureaucracies to educate, tax, or enlist them. In the past, the quick movement of mass armies had been possible only through the occasional genius of a Napoleon or the temporary enthusiasm of revolutionary citizens. By the mid-1800s, however, tens of thousands of bewildered military recruits found that their marches or train transport, synchronized by telegraph, delivered them as close as possible to where thousands of armed enemy soldiers were, unfortunately, similarly being assembled. Newspapers stopped being journals of slow discussion or courtly gossip and started depending on featured foreign correspondents. Diplomatic crises had less time to calm down, as Foreign Office lassitude was regularly broken by urgent, just-arrived messages. Mass political movements sprang up faster than before. New factory techniques spread more quickly as well. One more consequence. Ever more jobs were available in America, and with this telegraph-aided globalization, increasing numbers of Europeans were able to make the arrangements to move there. New steamship lines appeared to bring the workers over, first by the thousands, then by the tens of thousands. There were Jews and Protestants, but there were also Catholics, lots of them, bursting with energy. The result was a dynamic, immigrant-rich America. It was everything Joseph Henry loved. It was everything Samuel Morse hated.